Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Welcome. Manu Das asked me to do to speak to you today. Give a talk, give a class. So I chose do your dharma, eliminate your karma. Wow, that sounds great. I like the title. It's got a ring. Do your dharma, eliminate your karma. That actually says it all. It pretty much says it all. So how do we do our dharma? What is dharma? Dharma is religion. Can we define dharma in one word in the English language? Not even remotely possible. Dharma is religion. What do you mean? A religion like Catholicism or Islam or Judaism? Yeah, could be. Could be that. Or it could be that which you do religiously. That can be a dharma of sorts. Your dharma is your purpose. It's got to have purpose. It's got to have meaning. That's dharma. If it has no purpose, no meaning, can it be dharma? How? Can't. If you live a life that is meaningless, has no purpose, no goal, no direction, are you doing dharma? How so? It's not possible. Dharma is duty, doing your duty. If you have children, do you have a duty to your children? Do you have a duty to your family? A duty or an obligation, that's dharma. Dharma, in a greater sense, here in the material world, is the law. Laws of man, that's dharma. Can we choose the laws? Not exactly. The government gives us the laws. We can choose to not pay attention. We can choose to break the laws. We may get away with it. We may not. Following the law is dharma. Customs. We have customs, don't we? Here in Ireland, there are many different customs that are product of the people. The culture, the society, the history, many customs, every country. Custom is dharma. Virtue. That's dharma. Virtue. What's that mean? That's doing the right thing, isn't it? Doing the right thing is dharma. Doing the wrong thing would be adharma. In Sanskrit, you put the letter a as a prefix in front of the word, and it means non, without, not. Adharma. It's not dharma, against dharma. So virtue, good conduct, being honest, truthful, this is dharma. How can one word have this many meanings? It does. The average word in the Sanskrit language has 22 meanings. So when you're translating Sanskrit, I used to work as a Sanskrit editor on Prabhupada's books when he was here on the planet. In fact, I used to run the Sanskrit department at one point. So one must be very careful. I mean, Prabhupada did the translating, so that was the hard part, the easy part, if you will. So all we had to do was make everything legible, readable, you know, look good, be consistent. Is it easy to translate Sanskrit when every word has 22 meanings? The simple answer is no, it isn't. It isn't. Dharma is an attribute. It's a manner, it's a mode. Dharma is justice. If the legal system of any country you can think of or choose to think of does not dispense justice, does not represent the people, does not handle things justly, if the people are shortchanged, if the people are manipulated, not properly represented, or cheated in some way, is that dharma? That's adharma. That's going against dharma. So, then, to add to all this, if dharma is your life purpose and the meaning of why you're here, then what else? Dharma is an expression of your nature. It's your essence. Your dharma is your essence. Your dharma is your nature. Can you change your nature in a lifetime? Anybody who knows you, if you get two people together, this one knows you and this one knows you separately, and the two people, you know so-and-so? Oh, I know him. I know him very well. And then you start talking about the other guy who's not there, and you start saying things about him that you all both know about, and you start laughing. Because why? Oh, well, yeah, that's him. Yeah, that's what he does. That's how he acts. That's what he... Oh, did he do that? Oh, yeah, that's him, all right. He would have done that. You know. So we share that. We know the essence of a person. If you had a sex change operation, which people do nowadays, would you be able to change your essential nature underneath it? Even though you changed your physicality? Would you? No. If you had an organ transplant, which is very common nowadays, would that change your nature? No. Your nature is your essence. That is your dharma. What's the dharma of sugar? Prabhupada has given this example 1,000 times. What's the dharma of sugar? Sweetness. What's the dharma of light, of fire? Heat and light. What's the dharma of water? Liquidity. Right? What's the dharma of winter? Cold. Right? Can we change these things? No. They're an intrinsic part of the nature of the thing. So what are the intrinsic innate qualities of you as an individual? We have a dharma of you, your dharma, as a person, as an individual in this lifetime. Good for how long? One lifetime. Here's your dharma coupon. Good for one lifetime. Here's your nature. This is what you're going to be like. Based on what? Based on guna and karma. Based on your nature, guna, and your karma. Your work and your desires. Right? So there's your nature. We won't change the nature in this lifetime. Okay? But then we also have the dharma of the soul. We are all souls inside each one of these bodies. We know the body dies. We know the soul is eternal. So do we have a temporary dharma as individuals in this lifetime? Yes or no? Yes. Absolutely yes. Do we have an eternal dharma as souls? Eternal souls. Correct. Which one is unimportant? Your temporary dharma, material dharma, or your spiritual dharma as a soul? Which one is not important?
They're both important.
They're both important. They're both important. Right. Now, we could say that the spiritual dharma is more important, and in fact, that's why we're here, because that's what we're most interested in Krishna consciousness, in bhakti yoga. That's why we all came here to begin with. You know, some of us for the feast, that's fine. It's no problem. But we all came here for a spiritual life. That's why we came. From way back. So, we have to determine what our dharma is as individuals. As a soul, what is the eternal Dharma? Prabhupada, again, has spoken about this numerous times. It's called what kind of Dharma in Sanskrit? Sanatan Dharma. What does Sanatan mean? Eternal Dharma. Well, if it's eternal Dharma, it doesn't change, correct? If it's eternal, it can't change. Well, what about the latest trends? What about the styles, the fashions? What about what the Pope just said? You know, what about different referenda are being voted on in different elections? No, it doesn't change eternal Dharma. Sanatan Dharma doesn't change with all that. What's our Sanatan Dharma? Service. Service. Seva. We are all here to serve. But there's a fundamental mistaken notion that we all share, no offense, is we think it means to serve ourselves, to serve our ego, to serve our own desires, to serve our own ends. That if you take to the theory of original sin as it is put forth by certain religions, that is your original sin. The original sin is wanting to serve yourself to the detriment or neglect of others. Okay? So, yes, serving others is good, but again, that's temporary. So service ultimately is service to God, because that's eternal. If we are souls part and parcel of God, Prabhupada gives the example of a drop of the ocean water. Even one small drop has all the qualities, the same chemical makeup as the entire ocean in the same proportion. Is that correct? Yes, it is. Well, we are drops, and God is the ocean. And to compare us to God, essentially, in nature, true. In quantity and power and energy, no, not so. So ultimately, we need to recognize service means service to God. What about service that you do on behalf of others? Maybe you help with charities. Maybe you help with the homeless. Maybe you do a lot of different things like that. You know, maybe you teach illiterate people. Good. Wonderful. That will generate karma for you. It will generate good karma, but it will generate karma. Service to God generates what kind of karma? No karma. As long as we generate karma, good or bad, we have to come back again and again and again on the cycle of samsara, repeated birth and death, to suffer the negative reaction to the karma or enjoy the positive reaction to the karma. By serving God, we eliminate the karma. We get off of the hamster wheel of repeated birth and death. Okay. So let's start more on the mundane level for a minute. It's very important to figure out your nature and your dharma as a person in this lifetime. And to try to establish that dharma and follow it and fulfill yourself. What happens if you don't follow your dharma? Unhappiness, lack of fulfillment, frustration, resentment, midlife crisis, serious illness. Now, I'm not going to say in every case that's exactly what it is, but in many cases, it's caused, some of these things are caused by people simply not following their dharma, not acting in harmony with who they are as an individual. Does that make sense? Can you recognize that? If you take a job that has nothing to do with who you are, nowadays it's very common and recommended by certain factions that you must study. Well, by nature, my dharma makes me an artist. I love to paint. I love to draw. I love to design and express myself in this way. And your mother tells you, there's no money in that. There's no money in that. That's stupid. It's a waste of time. Why would you do something like that? You need to go into business. You need an MBA, a master's in business administration, or you're nothing. You're nobody. Or you need to get a degree in technology. You need to become a programmer. You need a code. That's the only way you're going to get anywhere in this world. You creative types. So that person goes out and gets a business degree. Miserable, unhappy, unfulfilled. Not even remotely close to their nature. So, making money though. Depressed. Likes to drink in the evenings. It's popular anyway. Whatever. You know. We're losing this more and more. We're losing the need to step into the essence of our being. It's being discouraged. Unless it earns a lot of money, why are you doing it? So, if you actually follow your dharma and act in accordance with your nature, at that time, you can. The chances of your finding happiness, fulfillment, and reward are much, much greater, are they not? Is it reasonable? I'm not, by the way, an impractical guy. I don't say that we shouldn't pay bills and take care of things. We have to be practical. I know that. I had a lot of jobs when I was younger that I really didn't want. Okay? So don't look at me like I'm sitting here on my ivory Vyasas on. And it's just been a smooth ride. Because it hasn't been. Okay, but I had to work my way up to, number one, figure out what I finally, even though I got into yoga and spirituality at the age of 1969, and became a devotee around 1972, long time ago, I never actually figured out my life purpose until I was 33. And I didn't actually begin to do my life purpose until I was 39. So, is it just like, oh, flick a switch. Well, here's my dharma. I'm ready. I'm off. I'm going. Not always like that. It may take time. So you need to be patient with yourself. And you need to be compassionate with yourself. And you need to get closer to Krishna. So he will help you with that. Okay. Dharma must be a win-win situation. Following your dharma is a win-win situation. What is a win-win situation? Good for me, good for you. It fulfills you as an individual. It makes a contribution to the world around you. You can live a life in this world. You can go through an entire life and never make a single contribution to society. Do you know anybody like that? There's some people out there, right? They don't really care about doing anything that makes a contribution. It's just like what I need. I'm just, you know, working my own little thing here. We find people like that in every country in the world. Correct? So you must, in some way, make a contribution. That's dharma. You may say, I can only do so much. Well, then that's good. Then do that. fine, better than nothing. But I don't, nowadays I like to say win-win-win situation. Why? Who's the third winner? Whatever it is you do must be good for you, it must be good for others, and it must be good for Mother Earth. Because we've been slowly destroying Mother Earth now for, I don't know, at least since the end of the Second World War. At least since then. Or earlier. And we're doing it at such a pace nowadays that it's getting scary. So it must not be harmful to Mother Earth. Because if you're helping yourself, helping others, and you're harming Mother Earth, is that Dharma? How could it be? If we're killing animals, is that Dharma? If we're taking someone's life unnecessarily, is that Dharma? How can that be Dharma? Now, some people say, yeah, but I got desires. I want some things. I need some things. Desire is a bad thing? Not necessarily. And we know we're here to fulfill some desires. You can't necessarily just renounce all your desires. At least that's been my experience. You can't necessarily walk away from everything and just, oh, pretend I don't need it, yet I think about it all the time. Krishna talks about that in Bhagavad Gita. So some desires can be fulfilled. There is enjoyment available in the material world. But how do we determine which desires are worthy of following and pursuing and which are not? Easy. By aligning them with your purpose, with your Dharma. So you say, I want such and such. Does it align with my Dharma? Is it in harmony with my Dharma, with the main path? Think of your Dharma as being on the main road, the main path in life that you're following. That is your Dharma. Right? Now, you will have noticed on many occasions that there are diversionary roads going off this side, that side. Some of them just go around in a big circle, like a roundabout. Maybe you've been on one of those before, wondering when you're going to get off. Oh, I got time yet. You know, well, that was fun. Was that part of your Dharma? No, not really. Sometimes people go off on their diversionary path away from their Dharma, and what happens? They never come back. Is that true? You know anybody like that? Of course you do. Ever been like that? Show of hands? No, keep your hands. Sure you have. It's pretty hard to stay on the straight and narrow. I mean, let's be honest. Is it easy to stay on the straight and narrow path your entire life? Well, we're raised in the West here, my friends. It's a little different for us raised in the West. It's not always easy. We are taught different values, different customs. Might be easier for people in India, but the problem with the Indian people is they've been taught to emulate the West. Who told them that? That was Prabhupada's purpose. What's Prabhupada's Dharma? Yeah, to get everybody to become Krishna conscious. We know that. But Prabhupada's Dharma was to bridge East and West. Bring the spiritual culture of India and the yoga philosophy to the West with the West's technology and development and, you know, our ability to get things happen down here on the physical plane, on the material plane. And make a functional marriage. I dare say he's achieved that in many ways. But, yeah, we don't want to go off in too many tangents. That's the point. Okay, so what is the difference between purpose and desire? Real simple. Give and take. Really? Yeah. Purpose is what you're here to give. My purpose is to do... I'm sitting here right now doing my purpose. I'm real clear on it. I'm trying to share what I have, what I know, what I've understood. I've done Vedic astrology now for 38 years. I have clients all around the world. I've seen up 40,000 charts plus. So that's kind of my dharma. So one must give when one executes one's dharma. Desire is desire, your desires, your personal desires, giving or taking. It's taking. It's having, it's enjoying. Is that wrong? No. Unless it's harmful. But it must also be in harmony with your desire and must be in balance. Giving, taking. Some of us give more, some of us take more. Okay. So on purpose or dharma, we have giving, desire, we have taking. When we do our dharma, we focus on the work itself, on the action itself. Not the fruits of the action, not the results, but on the action itself. When you are doing your dharma at your job, at your work, at your career, at your home, doing your hobby, right? When you are doing your dharma, what is the reward? The reward is in doing the work itself, is it not? If you are not rewarded by the work that you're doing, and this could be your job as well, but you're projecting the result of the work, the fruits of the labor, that's what I'm going for. I'm going for 5 o'clock Friday paycheck. Is that your dharma? No. Yeah, you like 5 o'clock Friday, you like the paycheck. I get it. It's not your dharma. If that's where your joy lies, you are projecting it forward to 5 o'clock Friday. The joy must be there while doing the work. Better yet, you do the work out of love, out of joy. And the more spiritual you are, the more advanced you become, the result doesn't matter at all. It's unimportant. That's a transcendental state of mind, a spiritual state of mind, and that's where we're heading here with Bhakti Yoga. And we'll get to a couple of verses here in a minute. And I'll explain that more from a spiritual point of view. So, if you're doing your dharma, you're focusing on the work itself. And if you're caught up in desire, you're focusing on the result of your work. If you're doing your dharma, you will have real fulfillment. If you're following desire, there will be a lack of real fulfillment. Because, I just got my needs met. I just fulfilled my desire. Oh, it was so fantastic. And then it was over. Oh. The fulfillment didn't last. Even you get a brand new car, nice new BMW. Yeah? And you just want to drive it all the time, polish it and wash it, and, you know. Then after a while, what happens? Huh? It rusts. It wears out. The novelty wears off. Dharma is situated where in the body? In the heart. Right? And desire is situated where? In the mind. Do you ever change your mind? Does your mind ever take you on one of those wild rides? And you don't know when it will let you off? Have you ever counted how many different thoughts your mind produces in 1 minute? Just try that sometime. That'll make you crazy right there. I'm just kidding about the crazy part. We're trying in bhakti yoga to control the mind. Krishna says, the mind is the best friend or the worst enemy. Depends. Desires are endless. Material desires, desires connected to the body, are endless. Just like rivers flowing into the sea. When do they stop? They never stop. Do you ever wonder? I did a couple of times, you know. Gee, it hasn't rained in a long time. Here are these rivers. Still flowing into the sea. I mean, you know. Where does that water come from? So, if we are true to ourselves, true to our heart, then we will know if we're doing our dharma. No one will have to explain it to you. If you're not doing your dharma, my friends, in terms of this lifetime, I suggest that you do it as quickly as possible. Try to figure it out and try to figure out a way to do it. Many years ago, my mother, God bless her, she's not with us anymore. When I moved to Toronto to join the ashram, the Krishna ashram, in 1973, she says, because I had to. I lived in the ashram for 5 years. I had to dedicate my life to Krishna. I had to learn to practice yoga 24/7. I had to surrender to Prabhupada at that time. And it changed everything. It changed my life completely. It set me off on a new course. I have had experiences that I never would have had. My life has been a charmed life, a blessed life. I've been everywhere. And it's been very exciting. Truly. But my mother would call and she'd say, "When are you coming home? Just come home." I'm in my early 20s. "Come home. We'll get you a job at the school board. Don't worry. I'll put in a word. I know somebody at the school board. You can get a nice office job at the school board." There's nothing wrong with an office job at the school board. I know that. But for me, no. That was not my dharma. Well, what if I would have taken that job, my friends? Okay, I'll come home. I'll work at the school board until I retire. Would I be sitting here now? No. Was it hard to break away from my family and do that and move to a big city 2,000 miles away? Was it hard? Yeah, it was very hard. As a young man, it was very hard. But I was following my dharma. So it had to be done. Your dharma should be in harmony with yourself in this lifetime. Desire is generally, not always, generally a product of ego. Okay, how are you going to figure out what your dharma is? Well, who am I? Why am I here? What am I supposed to do? What's my life about? I mean, it's got to be about something. You can't just, you know, be here for a while, grow old, and then die, and that's it. Nothing more. Yeah, that's it, and you're finished. What about the soul? No soul. You should be dead. In the ground. Do you really believe that?
Yeah.
Okay. It's nonsense. Everything has a purpose. Everything. If you go into a big department store like Arnott's next door, and you got how many people working there? You know, I don't know. Hundreds of people, no? What are they, just there? Because they look good? Just wander around the aisles? No, each person's there for a purpose, aren't they? They have a job to do with regard to that department store. They have responsibilities. They have duties. They get paid. Every single one of them. From the guy with the low job to the high job. No. Because everything and everybody has a purpose. So, am I now acting in accordance with my nature? Ask yourself this question. Am I making a contribution to the world around me? I don't care if it's small. Remember they were building the bridge to Lanka? The monkeys, the Vanars are throwing big stones. The stones were floating. Wait a second. Stones don't float. Why were the stones floating? They wrote a little mantra on the stone. What mantra did they write? Rama. Two words, two letters. Rama, one word. Name of God. And the stones floated. And that got the monkey army, the Vanara army, over to Sri Lanka. And there was a little, was it a spider? A little spider, he's at the edge of the sea there, and he's collecting little grains of sand, and he's going, he's putting grains of sand into the water. The monkey's like, hey, what are you doing there? Get out of the way. You know, we've got important work to do here. We're serving wrong. And when Ram came up, he said, he is serving the spider according to his capacity. You cannot suggest that your work is more important than his, because it isn't. It isn't. It has a different effect. It is not more important. Your dharma doesn't have to be big. You can do spider dharma. You don't have to do monkey army dharma. But this is all done for God's satisfaction. This is the point I haven't stressed yet very much, is that everything must be done in service to God. I mentioned it for the satisfaction of God, because then you can do your dharma as an individual in this lifetime. You offer the results of your work, your dharma, to God. And now you've got the material and the spiritual covered. You've got the temporal and you've got the eternal covered. You've got earth and you've got heaven covered. All by doing the one thing? Yes. I'm going to quote the verse in a minute. And the last thing you ask yourself, who am I? Why am I here? Am I making a contribution? Am I following my heart? Dharma resides in the heart. Do you have to be a rocket scientist to figure out if you're doing your dharma? I think not. You just have to sit quietly, my friends, and go into your heart and tell me. Tell you, yourself. Am I following my heart? Do I listen? What is that voice inside? Anyway, what is it? It's Paramatma, super soul, God in the heart. Does God say, I'm God in the toe? Does he say that? Did you read that anywhere? Because I didn't. I'm God in the elbow. Follow your elbow. No. Your heart. Right. Am I following my heart? If you say yes, I'm following my heart. You must be doing your dharma. You want to be blessed? You want to lead a blessed life? You want to lead a charmed life? You want to lead a magnificent life? It doesn't mean magnificent, better than anybody else. We're not trying to do better. We're just trying to do our own thing properly. It's not a competition. You can't be, this gentleman cannot be this gentleman better than this gentleman can be who he is. It's not possible. No one does your individuality better than you, no matter how hard they try. So you can say, but this person can do this, this, and this. That's them. It's not you. It's not a competition. It's a fulfillment of self. That's what it is. Svai svai karman yavi rataha sangsidhim labbate naraha svakarma nirita siddhim yata vindati tachrinu. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 45. This is Krishna speaking. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna, God, talking. Oh, yeah, right. How do you know God's talking? Read Bhagavad Gita. If you've met any human that talks like that, please give me his phone number. I want to dial the guy up because I want to go sit at his feet and see what he knows. If that's not God talking, I don't know. Or we need to look. Because we won't find him speaking in the bus schedule. So this is what he said. He said to Arjuna, his friend, his cousin, a warrior, just before the battle. Arjuna was supposed to fight along with his brothers to get their kingdom back that had been usurped by their, let's say, disingenuous, not truthful cousin, Duryodhana. And they were just on the verge of fighting. Arjuna says, I don't want to fight my relatives. I don't want to go against my family, even if they did steal the kingdom. So Krishna was explaining to him, dharma, what is your duty? You are a warrior. You're a kshatriya. You're a warrior. Your duty is to protect the people, the kingdom, the law, the custom, how things are done. Your duty is to act righteously to protect everything. That is the goal of the duty of the warrior, the king, the leader, the protector. And Arjuna says, no, I don't think I can do this. So Krishna is speaking. So Krishna says in this verse, by following his qualities of work, every man can become perfect. Isn't that what I've been talking about? Qualities of work? Right? Now please hear from me how this can be done. So now he's taking it. I've introduced it. Now I'm going to turn it over to Krishna. I'll let him fill in the details for you. He knows way more about this than I do. So the very next verse, 1846, yata pravatir bhutanam yena sarvam idam tatam svakarmanata babhyarcha siddhing vindati manavah, which means by worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings, who is all-pervading. A man can attain perfection through the performance of his own work. Well, can we make it more clear? Could it be more clear? Well, what does that mean, though? Good question. It means whatever you do, do it for God. Do it for God's pleasure. But if you do it in harmony with your purpose, with your dharma, you too will be fulfilled. But is Krishna telling you to do something that isn't reflective of your dharma? No. He's telling you to do something that is reflective. Okay? We're consistent here. When you offer yat karoshi yat ashnasi yat joshi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurushva marapanam. Whatever you do, yat karoshi, yaj ashnasi, whatever you eat, yaj johoshi, whatever you offer and give away, dadasi yat should be whatever you dadasi, whatever you give away, yat tapasyasi, whatever penance and austerity you undergo, yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurushva madarpanam should be done as an offering unto me, is what Krishna said. Why? Because there's no karma. This is how you eliminate your karma. This is how you walk the streets and do apparently what everybody else does at your job, go on about your life and generate no karma. So you can do what it is you do. Do you have to become a monk? No. Do you have to go live in a cave in the Himalayas? No. Do you have to move into an ashram? No. Do you have to change your work and just chant and meditate all day long? No. That's not what this says. Yeah, you should meditate in the sense that you're offering what you do to God. You can meditate all day long without sitting in meditation all day long. I like to think that I meditate all day long because I keep talking to Krishna throughout the day. And I offer all kinds of stuff to him as I go along. It's not a big production. I don't have to sit down in a lotus posture and stop everything and do pranayama. I mean, if you want to do that, you can do that, of course. I'm not saying it's a negative idea, but it needs to be practical. Practical. Next verse, 1847. Shrayan Svadharma Viguna. This is a famous one. Paradharmat Svanushtat Svabhava Niyatan Karma Kurvan Napnoti Kilbisham. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even if you perform it imperfectly. Yeah, but what if I don't do it as good as I should? It is still better to engage in your own occupation. Meaning what? Your dharma. Don't take on the dharma of somebody else. I had a summer job when I was a kid. You know, 16, 17. For 2 months. It was like 2 months of hell. And it was working for a painting and decorating firm that did big jobs like schools and dams and, you know, I had to drive the truck and load it up with 5 gallon tubs of paint and ladders and windows and you name it. I would have understood this verse if I had known it. Do not assume the dharma of somebody else. It was a good experience, you know, but it was not my dharma. Let's just say that.
It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. It's an interesting statement. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reaction.
Wow.
What is sinful reaction? What's another way to say that? Negative karma. Here he's saying, if you act in consonance, in harmony with your nature, with your dharma, there is no sinful reaction from that, as long as God is in the mix. But if you're doing something that isn't reflective of your nature, why is he telling Arjuna this? Because Arjuna says, I know I'm not going to fight. Oh, you, the guy standing there with a bow and arrows in your hand, you're the guy that's not going to fight. What did I miss? That's your dharma. That's your duty. You've been raised to do this. That's who you are. Yeah, no. He said earlier, I'm just going to go to the forest and meditate. Oh, well, good luck with that one. I wonder how long that's going to last. He's a warrior. He's not going to just sit in the forest under a tree and meditate. I think not. Krishna thought not. He says, never mind. If you're doing your duty imperfectly, just do your duty. Don't pretend to be something that you are not. That's, again, a problem with modern society. We pretend to be something we're not, and we do it for what? 20 or 30 years, and then we get real sick, or we become depressed. How many people are depressed these days? My God. Or, we do that midlife crisis business, or we come home. You know what happens a lot? There's such a level of frustration. The man comes home from his job. He takes it out on whom? His family. He's so angry with his job and the bosses or his supervisor, or takes it out on his family. Is this not common? Is it fair? If he was doing his dharma, it's not likely that he'd behave in that manner, would he? Because he'd be well situated, rightly situated. Now, Krishna points something else out that is absolutely fascinating and should be, one should make a note. Sahajam karma kaunteya sadosham api na tyajet sarvarambahi doshena dharme nagnir ivadaha. So the next verse, 1848. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, even if such work is full of fault. Well, what's he getting at? Well, as far as I can understand what he's getting at here, we are in the material world. Should we, because we're in the material world, does that mean we shouldn't do the best? We shouldn't do the best work we can? We shouldn't be conscientious in our job? We should just shirk our responsibilities, do a crap job, do as little as possible if we can get away with it? No. We should always do the best job possible. Some people think, yeah, well, you're stupid. What are you working so hard for? I can do half as much as you, still get the same pay. And the guy thinks, yeah, hey, I'm putting one over on the system. Boss doesn't know what I'm doing. I'm ever so clever. But you don't understand how it actually works. Success in the material world is generated by the production of success. Success breeds success. Good work breeds a better job. That's how you go up the ladder. The better the job, the better the work, the better the service that you do, that causes expansion in your life over time. The better the opportunities will come. will follow you. That's a fact. That's a universal principle of expansion. So people who think by doing little or nothing and getting away with it, that they've got the system figured out, will never be out of that position. They'll never go beyond that. So that's one thing to point out. So what's he mean here? Every endeavor is covered by some fault. It's the material world, my friends. Can you find perfection in the material world? Can you find the perfect situation, the perfect relationship, the perfect job, everything just exactly, ideally as you want it? Yes or no?
No.
It's not possible. It's not on offer. Sorry. Close, yeah. You can maybe get close in some ways. Real close, perhaps. But you can't. Because this world is illusion. It's Maya. This is not our world. We don't belong here. In fact, we are like fish out of water. Here. How do you know? Because you get old, you suffer. You suffer disease. Your body diminishes, it dwindles, and it dies. And no one wants any of that. No one. That I've met. And then it starts all over again when you get another body. Oh, whoop-dee-dee. I got another body. I'm young again. You didn't learn last time, huh? What do you mean? I'm back. Better than ever.
Yeah, give it about 75 years there.
No. Perfection does not exist here because we're souls. We have to go back where we belong in the spiritual world with God. That's where perfection and complete fulfillment exist. That's why we can never find it. That's what he's explaining. So, if every endeavor is covered by fault, it's okay. Don't make yourself crazy because you're not perfect. That's another thing people do a lot these days. Self-criticism. Anger at self. Destructive criticism. Pounding oneself down. Well, how about constructive criticism for improvement? So, stay, Krishna says, do your dharma, doesn't matter. And sacrifice, he says, in the fourth chapter, Nayam Loko Stya Yagyasya Kuto Nya Kuru Sattama. What does that mean? He says, oh, best of the Kurus, he's talking to Arjuna, without sacrifice, one can never live happily on this planet or in this life, what to speak of the next. Without sacrifice, one cannot live happily. So we've been talking about doing your dharma. What's the sacrifice part that we just threw in? Actually, we've been talking about that all along. What is the sacrifice? Doing it for God. That's the sacrifice. Everybody must sacrifice something to God. When you meditate on God, when we talk about God like we are now, we talk about Krishna, we talk about Bhagavad Gita, we chant Kirtan, we chant the names of God, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, various other mantras connected to God. That, all those things, we eat prasadam, food that has been offered to God. All of that is sacrifice. Because you're taking the time and you're putting in the energy to acknowledge God and to develop and to expand your relationship to God. That's all sacrifice. And what does sacrifice mean? Well, most people think that sacrifice means to give something up, to do without,
to sacrifice something. Does it mean that?
Yeah, it does.
But what does it actually mean? It comes from the Latin two words, sacer and facere. To make sacred. That's what sacrifice means. To make your life sacred. If there's no sacred, if nothing is sacred and nothing is done for a sacred or spiritual purpose in your life, then your life, I submit, is an empty life. Here, we learn to turn an empty life to a full life by learning how to do these kinds of sacrifices that we do in the context of bhakti yoga that are very, very simple. Anybody can do. Children can chant, sing, dance, sing mantras and songs. So it's not as though it's difficult. It isn't. I'm just going to read this very short few lines from Prabhupada, from one of his purports. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 24. The absolute truth covered by Maya is called matter. Matter dovetailed for the cause of the absolute truth regains its spiritual identity. So anything that is material or mundane or connected to the body, if it is reconnected to God, to the absolute truth, it regains the spiritual quality it has lost by being touched by Maya, contaminated by Maya. Right? Let's take a mundane example. Somebody who's drunk is contaminated with alcohol. The next day, he regains his sobriety once the alcohol has gone. He becomes decontaminated, effectively. Krishna consciousness is the process of converting the illusory consciousness into Brahman. What's Brahman? Spirit. Brahman is the essence of the spirit, or the supreme. Brahman is the supreme. When the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness or God consciousness, Prabhupada said, oh, well, they don't want to worship Krishna. No, they want to worship Allah. Fine. Chant Allah. Chant Allah's names. It is said to be in samadhi or trance. You meditate on Krishna, you connect to Krishna, your mind will become in trance, in samadhi. Anything done in such a transcendental consciousness is called yajna or sacrifice. So we've been talking about Krishna and a lot of other things, but I am trying to connect them to Krishna for you. And in that sense, all of this becomes a sacrifice. In that condition of spiritual consciousness, the contributor, the contribution, the consumption, the performer, the leader, the performance, and the result or ultimate gain, everything becomes one with God. All of it, all of us, everything. Confirmed. The Supreme Brahman. That is Krishna consciousness. That is what we're here for. Okay. Then finally, Krishna said to Arjuna, thus, I have explained to you knowledge most confidential than before, that he had explained Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam. Then he says, deliberate on this fully, O Arjuna. Think about it. And then what? do what you wish to do. Do what you wish to do. You mean God didn't slap him about the head and threaten him with this, that, and the other? And if you don't do that, I'm going to make you feel guilty for all your days. I'm going to throw down a thunderbolt, hellfire, and brimstone on your head. Oh, no, this isn't the Old Testament. Oh, wrong book. No. No. That's not God. God is love. God is respectful. God is understanding. He's compassionate. That's Krishna. So what's he giving Arjuna here? He's giving him an option. You mean he's not forcing? No. If you're busy forcing people to do things they don't want to do, then you're not exactly being godlike. He gives them the choice because he's given us all what? Free will. We're all free. We all have free will. And even at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, which is this thick, after all of this instruction, do what you wish to do. I've told you everything I can tell you. I've tried to convince you in so many ways. Do what you wish to do. It's up to you. Is that not love? That's why we do bhakti yoga here. Because the yoga of love and devotion. It's all about love. For whom? For everybody. Including you. That's why we develop a loving, reciprocal relationship to God. That is our goal. To just get off the wheel of repeated birth and death? No, we say, yeah, that's a good thing. Well, we want to go a step beyond. We want the relationship, the loving relationship with God. Much, much sweeter. So he says, do what you wish to do. And the last thing he says, sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam braja am tvam sarva papebhyo mukshayishyami ma shuchah. He says, but never mind all this, Arjuna. What? Never mind all this. All this detailed information. All these yoga systems. We told him all of the different yoga systems. Never mind all that. Abandon all varieties of religion. Abandon all varieties of dharma? What have I been sitting up here for an hour for? What am I talking about? No, forget about all that. Just surrender to me. Give your life, your heart, your soul, your mind, your work, your activities, your dharma. Give it all to me. Just give it to me. And I'll take care of it. He said, I will deliver you from all negative reaction. Do not worry. Do not fear. Just give it all to me. Lay it at my feet, and you're good to go. Wow. You mean you're going to take this heavy burden off my shoulders? Uh-huh. Why? Because I love you. I don't want you to stress over this stuff. I'm just telling you how it all works. How it fits. Where you are now, where that fits. And where we need to be. And say you don't want to do any of this. It's too much here in the material world. Because you know what? At times, it's way too much.
You know it. Forget about it. Give it to him. He'll take it. Problem is, you don't want to let it go. You're holding so tight, you're squeezing, your knuckles are white. Huh? What if I let go? Oh my God. I don't know. Yeah? Scary business. Will I fall over? Yeah, maybe. Will I topple? Yeah, could. Okay. Do your dharma, eliminate your karma, or just let it all go. Give it to Krishna. He'll look after you. Hare Krishna. Questions? Some, none? Not stimulating enough, I guess.
Well, I have questions. You mentioned the difference between the mind and the heart. Does that correspond to any like Vedic notions, or could you give me a feel for what the difference of them is?
Well, just read the Bhagavad Gita. What does Krishna say about the mind? Best friend or worst enemy?
Right.
An out of control mind is the worst possible thing. And he, what does he say? God in the heart.
He says when the mind is, when you've attained tranquility, you've attained God within.
That's right. The mind has to be neutralized. Neutralized. Brought into a state of balance. Yeah, I know it's a juggling act. We know that. Even so many years we try to neutralize the mind and it takes the stick to us. You know. But heart, it's the heart. Well, why the mind? Because the mind thinks and the heart loves, isn't it? What do we want in the world? A bunch of ideas about stuff? Want to go to university and get a degree and have your head crammed full of knowledge? That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. Will it make you happy? No. Where's the joy? Where's the happiness? In the brain? No, it's in the heart. It's in the heart. It's where God... Why does he say he's in the heart? Is he just kidding or what? He's in the heart. It's all about the heart. You know that. You mean, if you follow your intuition, is it always correct? Yes. Absolutely, unless your desires get in the way of your intuition, which is common. Because we get attached to his desire and then we ask our intuition, well, what am I feeling about this? Well, I really want it though. The mind is going, I want it. Intuition becomes clouded. The intuition, the heart, can be overridden by desire. Intuition is never, I had to talk to my clients, well, you told me to follow my intuition, I follow my intuition. It was wrong. Intuition is never wrong. You're just not hearing it. You're on some other wavelength. Yeah, but he's so cute. I really wanted to be with him. Uh-huh. Yeah, did you follow your intuition? I thought I did. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. You know, follow your intuition, follow your heart. That's where the joy is. Joy. We all want joy. We all want love. What's the greatest joy? Love. Prabhu.
Sometimes it's very confusing to know, like, what's our intuition, what's our ego, what's our mind. So, isn't that what the spiritual master is there for?
Mm-hmm.
To help guide us. Sometimes we need someone who's more experienced.
Yeah.
To help, you know.
Absolutely.
Find out what's real and what's not.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, you take advice from people. You seek somebody who's more experienced. I mean, what I do is I read Prabhupada's books. I listen to his lectures and stuff, and I read the Vedas. I read my godbrother's books, the ones that appeal to me. You know, I read all kinds of stuff, but mostly Sanskrit books, you know, in the Vaishnava line, because that's what... It's the highest philosophy that I've found. Then what? College stuff? Because reading spiritual or philosophical texts that explain the yoga process can get you off the wheel of repeated birth and death. I'm sorry? No, it doesn't have to be a book. No, you're right. Your meditation can do that. Your communion with God can do that. Your yoga practice could do it. Your prayer could do it. It doesn't have to be a book. I'm just saying, you know, that's one way. It's not the only way. Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to have kirtan.
Question.
Yes, Ishwara.
Prior to 500 AD, all the faiths were vegetarians. What changed people who follow Islam and Christianity to take to meat eating? What changed them?
Well, I did not know until this moment that Islam was vegetarian at one point in time. He says that.
Yes, he says that, and he has done a
vegetarian. Mm-hmm.
Took it all the way through.
And Christians were also
vegetarian. Christ was a vegetarian.
Saint Francis was a vegetarian.
Yes. What changed them? What made them? Christ ate fish. So it says in the Gospels.
Well, it says that he multiplied the fishes. Didn't say that he ate them, did it? Does it say that?
But it did say he took fish and he ate fish.
Okay, fair enough.
So there's actually discussion on it that there's translation to the main Arabic fish, so it's controversial.
Oh, okay. I haven't studied that, so I don't honestly know. I can answer it in this way. The progress of Kali Yuga, the Iron Age in which we live of the universe, this era, this epoch, means the diminishment of society. It's going down and down and down in its behavior and its practices of adharma, its giving up of dharma and paths of dharma. And just accepting many, many things that were not okay to be okay just because they're trendy and now in vogue. Whereas real religion means eternal religion, real dharma. It does not change with the trends. So, you know, I don't know that I can answer that question unless... You know.
Another question related to that. How can you justify the people who are following Islam when they're eating meat? The meat eaters. So how can...
Well, you know, Prabhupada used... Well, Prabhupada always would confront people and say... What he would with Christians, I mean, I've heard, you know, in fact, I witnessed it myself, but I've heard it from time to time on recordings. And he'd meet somebody, and this person was a, you know, a Christian priest or a Christian minister or some sort of evangelist, something like that. And Prabhupada said, "So you're a Christian?" "Yes, I'm such and such." "Okay. Do you accept 10 commandments?" "Yes, I do." "And do you follow?" "Yes." So Prabhupada says, "So you don't eat meat, you're a vegetarian?" "Oh, no, I eat meat." "Well, what about thou shalt not kill? What about this commandment?" oh, well, I don't kill people. You kill animals. Well, that's different. Do you ask the animal first? If he wants to be killed, it's okay before you eat him. So, yeah, he would be quite confrontational at times. But then he would say to us, this I can do, you cannot do. Because we're all so young. We're all in our early days. He says, you cannot speak to a man, a respectable person of this station when you're young like this. It's not appropriate. I can do, you cannot do. But, you know, I'm not in my early 20s anymore, so I guess it's okay. Philip's turn.
Yeah, I was just thinking about what he said about so much meeting goes on at the moment, and how the animals are forced into an unnatural way of life. So even an animal has a dharma or a purpose in the ecosystem that it has to be filled. It actually gets impeded from doing that, and then it gets killed. It's kind of addictive. Like, you know, there's so many people that are disconnected from their dharma.
Well, you know, when you're doing factory farming, factory abattoir, slaughterhouse, mass slaughter, on the level that we do it, the thing that a lot of people don't understand about this mass production, industrialization of slaughterhouses and meat sale preparation, etc., it creates negative karma. And it creates a collective negative karma when the majority of the citizens in a given country or place are indulging in this. They're participating in this. In the Manu Sanghita, it says the person who raises the animal for slaughter, the person who slaughters the animal, the person who drives the animal to market, the person who sells the animal part, the person who buys it, the person who cooks it, and the person who eats it, all share in the karma. Seven persons. So the Sanskrit word for meat, do you know the Sanskrit word for meat? Mamsa. Sometimes they say mangsa, or mamsa. It's composed of two Sanskrit words. Mam sa. Me, mam sa. He. Me, he. Today I eat he, next lifetime he eats me. That's where meat word comes from. He, then me, then he, then me, then he, then me. That's a lot of good eating, boy. All that karma attached to it. So don't worry. Don't go around feeling guilty. Oh, I did this, I did that. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Fresh start. Fresh start. When? Today. Today. Well, you can do it today. Okay, that was a long one. Okay, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you so much. Hare Bol. Hare Krishna. Yeah, one more question.
I'm a vegetarian, but sometimes I try to tell the people be vegetarian, but sometimes I stuck with two things when non-veg person asked me, like, okay, we don't feed the animal, it's fine, but what about the vegetables, like we grow them and we kill them?
Vegetables have a growing season. If you don't pick the vegetable at the end of the growing season, it's called harvest, it will die. It will die. The plant will die in the winter. And when it comes to fruits that grow on trees, they don't die. But if the fruit falls off the tree, it will go rotten. Right? Decompose. So you don't necessarily kill the plant. But still, Prabhupada has said,
Yes, there is still some karma attached to some of this. That's why we do what? We offer it to God. And this neutralizes any flaw or fault. We might say, oh, we're going to go out and collect apples in the orchard. And what we don't know is we've killed so many ants and worms by stepping, collecting apples. We've killed these innocent insects. Is there not karma? Yes. So we make the offering, the karma is neutralized. That's what we've been saying.
Srila Prabhupada was talking to a Christian minister in Melbourne. And the minister was speaking with Prabhupada for about an hour, and he said, oh, so you are all vegetarians? And Prabhupada said, no. He said, you're not? He said, no. He said, we are prasadarians.
We only eat sacred food, prasadarians. We only eat food that's been offered to God. That's what he's saying. Okay. What are we doing now?
Now
we're going to chant. Okay. Kirtan, and then after Kirtan? Prasadam. Don't go anywhere yet. The highlight is still coming. The kirtan.